weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
And thank you so much for joining me. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, live on Sundays from 10 to noon here at iHub Radio. You can always listen to shows you've missed or go back and listen to past shows if you'd like. We do have podcasts up at almost every site where you might find the podcasts you like. You can go through tunein.com, or there are lots of other sites that have podcasts. Just put in iHub Radio and Anita Rufus and you'll find it. Okay, we're 2 days to Super Tuesday, which includes here in California, although evidently millions of people have already voted in California with mail-in ballots. And they did that before the results yesterday from South Carolina, where Joe Biden finally did resurface as a serious candidate. We're only 9 days from primaries in Michigan and Washington State, 16 days from Florida, Illinois, Ohio, and Arizona. And the results from those four will be really instructive, because those states are states that could make a huge difference in who ends up in the White House. In 23 days, we've got the Georgia primary, and that's another one that'll be a big indicator of what's going on as we head toward the election, which is now less than 250 days away. The South Carolina primary. Some people have been asking, well, why is all of the attention being put on the Democrats? Yeah, that's the big story, and yeah, that's interesting. But, you know, there actually is a serious candidate running against Donald Trump. Why didn't we hear anything about that from South Carolina? Well, because South Carolina canceled the Republican primary. They didn't want there to be even the slightest chance. By the way, this is also true up in the caucus state of Iowa. They didn't want there to be any chance that moderate Republicans or never Trumpers or Republicans who are sick of Trump could register that by putting in a vote against the president. So they just canceled the primary. Now, some Republicans did vote anyway in South Carolina and even in the Iowa caucuses, because they had been encouraged both by the president himself and by right-wing talk radio hosts. Since there was no primary for Republicans, if it was an open primary, which it was in South Carolina, hey, you Republicans, go to the polls. Take a ballot and vote for Bernie Sanders, because he'll be the easiest for Trump to beat. Well, if they did do that, it wasn't very successful, certainly not in South Carolina, because Joe Biden beat Bernie Sanders like 2-1. The spending, the money that is being spent on this presidential primary throughout the country, has already surpassed $1 billion. And shockingly, or something that makes your eyes kind of open wide, half of that $1 billion has been spent by Mike Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York. This is the most that has ever been spent this early in an election cycle in the history of United States elections. Experts are predicting that more than $10 billion is going to be spent on political ads this season. And so far, Democrats have spent a whopping almost $1 billion on ads. Now, the concern about Bernie Sanders within the Democratic Party, because of his self-description as a socialist, I have to tell you, one of the things that has bothered me the most, it's not that I don't like Bernie Sanders or his message, although I kind of shy away from somebody who doesn't seem able to have a normal tone conversation ever. I mean, at least Elizabeth Warren can sound like a normal person and laugh once in a while. Bernie Sanders is waving his hands and yelling all the time. And that's what makes him so easy to parody by people like Colbert or Seth Meyers. And to tease the fact that he seems like that old man who's telling kids to get off his lawn. Here's the thing I have a concern about with regard to Bernie Sanders. I know what he wants to accomplish. Whether he would be able to or not, I know what his quote-unquote revolution is all about. But I frankly have no idea what he would be like as president. Because you can't be president and be waving your arms and shouting all the time. From the standpoint of the management of an administration, not just encouraging certain policies or admonishing people to act a certain way, or yelling at Congress, telling them what you want them to do. Aside from all of that, a president has to be able to manage the administrative branch, to put the right people in the right positions, to make sure that things are getting done. And the truth is, it is when we are faced with something like this coronavirus that you realize the importance of having a government. Sure, a lot of people rail against government. I don't like government. They're always telling us what to do, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what? We don't all exist in separate little areas and spaces, pods of our own, without the need to interact with others. And when you have a community of people, you have to have some rules. You have to have some way of making sure that civil society will prevail. That it isn't like the old Wild West where everybody can just settle things by having a duel in the middle of Main Street at noon. Government is necessary if you are going to have a communal society, a civil society. Now, does government sometimes go overboard? Are there people who lean too heavily on the idea of government and individuals start to feel constrained to have liberty and freedom? Sure, there's a balance to all of that. But we really are all in this together. So the idea that Bernie is pushing this concept of socialism, what he means by democratic socialism. I will tell you, this is really what bothers me the most. I have been saying for a long time, the difference between Republicans and Democrats on a political level, not on policy. Yeah, we want different outcomes in terms of policy and how much government should be involved and what rules should be in place to protect people as opposed to people being able to act independently. I get that there's all of that about policy, but that's not the same as politics. And the idea that our politics is about being able to explain what we mean by something, that doesn't work. I have said all along, Republicans want to win. And they will do almost anything to be able to do that. Democrats keep thinking that if we could just explain it, people would get it. And then they would support us. Well, it doesn't work that way. And so Bernie Sanders, who describes himself as a democratic socialist, and can point to lots of countries around the world that have really good outcomes and happier people and healthier people. All of those things are true, and they do practice a form of democratic socialism. But if you have to explain it to the American voters, when it's really easy for the other side to say, socialism one step away from communism. And when older voters, who tend to be the ones who show up and vote, remember what that means while younger voters have no sense of that history, that is a recipe for disaster. On a political level, if you've got to explain what you're talking about, you are losing the argument. So Bernie and socialism, whether it's the Green New Deal or Medicare for all or raising taxes, those are easy to attack as big government socialism. Now, it is true that democratic socialism is more about softening the effects of unbridled capitalism that has a winner-take-all attitude to it. And if we are all in this together, government, if nothing else, does have a role to play in making sure that those who aren't the winners in a capitalist system are at least getting the basics that one needs in order to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, it's true that younger people, millennials, Generation Z for sure, they're willing to embrace socialist policies, because they don't come from that same kind of history about what that word means. And so it's worth asking the question, how liberal are Democrats? Because clearly not all of them favor Bernie Sanders and his approach. And Gallup, they did some really important public opinion surveying, and Gallup found that it is true that Americans who self-identify as liberal, as opposed to saying I'm progressive because liberal is a dirty word, those who identify as liberal rose from about 17% in 1992 to over 25% in 2018. And there was a decline in people who identify themselves as moderates. More were willing to say they were liberal, and the number of people who called themselves conservative stayed just about the same. But when it comes to health care, climate change, budgets, getting a higher education, LGBTQ rights, women's rights, the number of people who support those outcomes is higher than we would realize, as long as we don't have to hang the label socialist around their necks.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I'm talking about the 2020 election and the fact that Joe Biden has had new life breathed into his campaign after a big win, 2-1 against Bernie Sanders in South Carolina. And we've got Super Tuesday coming up on Tuesday. And all too often, it seems that Bernie Sanders, who is poised to do well on Super Tuesday, he's been spending a lot of money, and he's been going out into those states a lot. He's much more organized in that way than Joe Biden is. But it's Bernie versus billionaires. That's his constant theme. We got to take a stand against the top 0.1%. And I've previously said on this show, wait a minute, not all billionaires are alike. Not all rich people are alike. Even Republican rich people have turned out very often to be really good people. They just may have some different ideas about the role of government. So we now have Jeff Bezos, who is the world's richest person, who is committing $10 billion of his own money. Oh, sure, that may be a small percentage of his total worth. But hey, come on. He's committing $10 billion of his own money to fight climate change. He says we can save the earth. It's going to take collective action from big companies, small companies, nation states, global organizations, and individuals. I'm committing $10 billion to start with, and we'll begin issuing grants this summer. Earth is the one thing we all have in common. And all these billionaires who are nameless and apparently horrible people. Well, you've got billionaire Michael Bloomberg, who's duking it out to try and take on billionaire, self-declared billionaire Donald Trump. They're often on billionaire Jack Dorsey's Twitter. Ads on billionaire Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook. All chronicled in billionaire Jeff Bezos's Washington Post. Billionaire Tom Steyer single-handedly pushed the idea nationwide and got a petition with hundreds of thousands of signatures moving for Trump's impeachment. He has now dropped out of the race because he says he does not see a path to winning after South Carolina. 60% of Republicans rely on billionaire Rupert Murdoch's Fox News for information. Most people are following the race on either iPhones or Androids, made by companies worth more than $1 trillion. And Bernie Sanders, who was asked on CNN this past week, if he got the nomination, would he accept money from Michael Bloomberg to help defeat Donald Trump? And he said no. As if that in itself made the money dirty in some way because it came from a billionaire. I think we need to be careful about the language we use. I think we need to be careful about who we're willing to write off. I think it is worth noting, although I didn't hear this on the news anywhere, that this past week a Democrat won a special election in the heart of Trump country in Kentucky, which is Mitch McConnell's state. Democrat named Rachel Roberts was declared the winner of a special election for the House in the state of Kentucky. That was a district carried by both Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell. And it elected a Democrat to the state house. Now, we've heard a lot about the fact that there might be a fight on the floor at the Democratic convention. And if nobody gets it on the first vote, if nobody walks into the convention with enough delegates to win the nomination, then it has to go to a second vote. And on that second vote, superdelegates would be allowed to have a role. And just so that you know, I was actually a superdelegate once because I had won a Democratic nomination in a primary contest here in the Coachella Valley for Congress. I ran against Sonny Bono in 1996. And because I had won that race, I was able to be considered a superdelegate if I went to the national convention. Many of these superdelegates have spent years or even decades working to help elect Democrats. And it includes elected officials, Democratic National Committee members, other party leaders. And the concern of many of the Democrats, and these are mainstream Democrats, well, it's the establishment. Well, yeah, they're the people who've been putting in the time and effort for years to make sure that Democrats can get elected. That's their role. And they are concerned that if Sanders is at the top of the ticket, it's going to cost us seats in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. Because if Sanders is at the top of the ticket, the entire Democratic slate of candidates at local, state, and federal level and the presidential race will be targeted and painted with that.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
So I wrote a note to myself that says, why isn't this leading the news? Yeah, the virus is a big deal. Yeah, the 2020 election is a big deal. But there's a lot of other news that's going on, and things are getting lost in the shuffle. And this isn't just one of those things you might not know if you didn't listen to this show. This is important. I mentioned a couple weeks ago what was going on in Syria as a result of the Syrian civil war, that close to a million people, including lots of families with children, have been displaced and have been heading toward the Turkish border, and Turkey doesn't want them to come in either. Well, meanwhile, this week, as a result of this brutal 9-year war going on in Syria, these people who are now living out in the open or under tents, there are children freezing to death in Syria. And the Syrian government is being helped by the Russian government. And we have all but abandoned any role in making sure that this isn't happening. What does the United States stand for in the world if not to be leading some kind of coalition to overcome this kind of brutality? Now, here's another thing that it's like, can this possibly be happening? I don't know if you remember, but last year at some point, the Oregon Senate Republicans fled the state of Oregon with passports in hand and hid out in Idaho to avoid voting on a climate change bill because they are outnumbered in the legislature in Oregon. And if they weren't there, then there was no quorum for business to be conducted. They knew they couldn't win the vote, so they just left the state. Well, guess what? They did it again. There was a new proposal to cap the state's greenhouse gas emissions. And most of the Republicans refused to attend the session this past Monday. They were searched for by the Senate sergeant-at-arms, who failed to find them. And the Senate was left with only 19 members on the floor, one short of a quorum needed to be able to vote. So in Oregon, state Republican elected officials are refusing to show up because they can't win. This is like grammar school crap. Now here's another article that I found that really... talk about opening your eyes and something that nobody is talking about. United States high schools are lagging way behind the rest of the world in math. The United States is 9th in reading worldwide, but it is 31st in what is known as math literacy. Out of 79 different countries And now it appears in an article in USA Today by Aaron Richards, it appears that one of the reasons that students in United States high schools are lagging behind the rest of the world in math literacy is because of the way we teach math in the United States. Classes here focus on formulas and procedures. But other countries that are way ahead of us in the world in having students who are literate in math are teaching students to think creatively about solving complex problems that involve all sorts of different kinds of math. So, for example, instead of starting kids in algebra, and then they go to geometry, and then they go to algebra 2, and then they go to trigonometry, in the world, what they're doing is exposing students at even younger ages to how to use math concepts to solve complex problems. Other countries teach 3 straight years of what they call integrated math with concepts of algebra, geometry, probability, statistics, and something called data science. An expert said 90% of the data that we have in the world right now was created in the past 2 years. We're at a point in this world where things are changing, and we need to help students learn how to navigate this new world. And by comparison with the United States, Estonia, a former Soviet Union satellite that broke off and is now independent in mid-Europe, Estonian students ranked first among European countries in math, and by the way, also in reading and science. For example, one of the reasons is Estonia is teaching computer programming, not just how to use a computer, but how to program a computer at every grade level. This is really an important thing if we want to maintain our dominance in the world in things like manufacturing and product design. Students need to learn, in our country, students need to learn why math is important, and they need to hear it at a much younger age. There's research that suggests that when teachers improve their own attitude toward math, it helps to raise student test scores. At Stanford, there was a team that designed an online course for teachers that featured research showing how anyone can learn math concepts. They recruited 5th grade teachers in Central California to take and discuss this course online. The results showed that within a year, the participating teachers, students, had posted significantly higher math scores in the state of California compared with previous years. So we need to teach teachers differently so that they will teach students differently. I want to share a good news story with you. There's an Iranian prodigy whose name I will surely mess up, but his name is Alireza Firouzshah. He is ranked the number 1 chess player in Iran and currently the number 2 ranked junior player in the world. He's a kid. Well, he has decided to change his nationality in order to get around the ban that Iran has on his ability to compete against Israelis in international chess championships. He was pressured to withdraw from a competition to avoid having to play against an Israeli opponent, and he has decided that he is going to give up his Iranian citizenship and either play on behalf of France where he is currently staying, or the United States. That's a nice story. Why shouldn't this kid be allowed to compete at the highest possible level? Another story. Do you remember when... I think there is somebody at the door. I'm not sure if the door is unlocked. Do you remember when Wells Fargo got into big trouble because they were setting up fake accounts? They were encouraging the people who work for Wells Fargo to set up these accounts because for every additional savings account or a new checking account that customers had, the people who worked there were given extra bonuses or got better grades on the kind of work they were doing. Well, obviously, Wells Fargo was taken to court and sued for the fact that they were setting up these accounts on behalf of customers and abusing customers without the customers knowing it. And it had been going on for more than 10 years. Well, guess what? Wells Fargo is going to pay a $3 billion fine for that little act. You heard the story, I'm sure, and this is one of those stories I just love, about the 42-year-old Zamboni driver for the Toronto Maple Leafs hockey team, ice hockey. He had been driving the Zamboni for the Maple Leafs for years. Well, the Maple Leafs were playing against the Carolina Hurricanes. Both teams' goalies had to leave the game for injuries. And the Carolina Hurricanes literally brought this Zamboni driver out of the stands to play goalie for their team against his own team, the team he usually drives the Zamboni for. And he helped the Hurricanes win by 6-3 by blocking 8 of 10 shots on goal against him in the last 30 minutes of the game. This is such a cool story. You could be sitting in the stands, maybe at the next World Series, and they need somebody to come out of the stands and do the heroic thing, and you could help them win the game. Now, this is the start of Women's History Month, and I want to share with you a couple stories about women that I think are worth making sure that we're aware of. It was big news when the state of Virginia finally, now that they have a Democratic legislature, ratified, became the 38th state to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment, which would give women legal rights the same as men in the Constitution. And I have said many times, if you're not aware of it, the Constitution only has one specific mention of women, and that is in the amendment that was passed that give women the right to vote. Nowhere else in the Constitution are women specifically mentioned. So, the Equal Rights Amendment is a simple addition to the Constitution that would just say that in all cases, women have the same right to be treated equally to men. Well, attorneys general in Tennessee, Alabama, Louisiana, Nebraska, and South Dakota have filed a motion to stop the ability of the ERA to become part of the Constitution because their states, after they approved the ERA, decided to vote against the ERA and withdraw their approval. And because Congress had passed a date 40 years ago by which if the ERA hadn't been ratified, it couldn't be part of the Constitution, which I might add is not true for almost any other amendment to the Constitution. Now the future of the ERA is uncertain, because those states' attorney generals are suing.
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, as I said, it is March 1st, and I am here live every Sunday from 10 to noon. This is iHub Radio. I want to close out the show today with a couple more items about Women's History Month. The Me Too women have stopped Harvey Weinstein. Those who were brave enough to come forward and be willing to speak publicly against this man who controlled and interfered with and impacted the careers of so many women in Hollywood. Well, almost 90 women came forward to accuse Harvey Weinstein. And it is true that some of them, even after he assaulted them, stayed connected to him in one way or another, even sometimes continuing some kind of a relationship with him. And if you have never been a woman in a situation where your entire career is predicated on keeping some predatory male at bay, if you've never been in that situation, then don't judge them. He faces the possibility of anywhere from 5 to 25 years in jail. I want to share with you the wonderful story about a woman named Katherine Johnson. She died this past week at the age of 101. But she was the woman who was the primary character in a movie called Hidden Figures about the women who were known as human computers. They were several hundred women who were rigorously educated. They were very capable and largely unheralded, unknown until this movie came out. But Katherine Johnson was the one who helped to do the calculations that enabled the Apollo 11 to land on the moon. And no less than the astronaut who put his feet on the moon said he wanted her to be the one doing the calculations. And I believe at the time she was the only woman who was in Command Central at NASA. She received a Presidential Medal of Freedom, and she was an amazing woman. She was a West Virginia native who began her scientific career in the age of Jim Crow. Did I mention she was African American? Died this past week at the age of 101. Katherine Johnson, a name to be remembered. Okay, I want to talk about leap year. Yesterday was the 29th of February. 28 days is all February has. How did we end up with leap year with an extra day? Well, it keeps our calendars aligned with the Earth's rotation around the sun. It turns out that a year is about 365.25 days long. So every 4 years, they add an extra day in order to keep the calendars accurate. This goes back to 1582, when Pope Gregory XIII's astronomers realized there was a time discrepancy, and they implemented the leap year system that we still use today. They had to remove 10 days from the calendar back in 1582 so that October 4th, 1582 was literally followed by October 15th, 1582, because that was when they realized how much time had already been lost. Timekeepers skip leap day in centuries that are not divisible by 400. That's to keep the days as exact as possible. Well, does that mean the calendar is correct now? Well, not exactly. It takes 365 days, 5 hours, and 48 minutes and 45 seconds for the Earth to travel around the sun. So there's still a little margin for error. Once in a while, timekeeping experts add what is known as a leap second to the clocks. But sometimes they add that in a period as short as 6 months from the last time they did it. Sometimes it's as long as 7 years from the last time they did it. The first leap second occurred in 1972. There have been 27 of them so far, and the last one, they added a leap second at the end of 2016. So, did you know that there's actually a name for those who are born on February 29th? Because their birthday literally only comes around once every 4 years. They're called leaplings. I'm not kidding. Leap day babies. But think about the legal complications that they may have to face. It's bad enough that they only get a serious birthday once every 4 years. Can they legally drink alcohol? Do they have to wait until March 1st of the year of their 21st birthday? Or can they drink it on February 28th if it turns out that their 21st birthday isn't in a leap year, which it won't be? Can they join the military? Which date are they legally considered to be 18? Which date gives them the right to vote? In 2012, a professor of law at the University of Iowa answered these questions in an interview. His name was John Reitz. He suggested that March 1st should be a leapling's legal birthday because that's still one day after February 28th, except in leap years. Well, how does that work? If you are a leapling, what should you be doing to make sure that you are legally recognized? I have no answer for that. I just thought it was really interesting because we don't think about it until every 4 years when there's actually a leap day. But now it turns out that there are also leap seconds. The last one was added at the end of 2016. I'm not sure when the next one will be added. Look, Tuesday is Super Tuesday all over the country, and particularly here in the state of California. If you voted early, good for you. I don't know that you can void your mail-in ballot by going into the polls and trying to vote in person, but you have tomorrow to call the county registrar of voters and ask if there's some way for you to change your vote if you've decided you want to change your vote. If you haven't voted yet, for God's sake, vote on Tuesday. Voting really matters. If there was any way to prove that, it is by realizing that those who chose not to vote, maybe because their favorite candidate wasn't the one who was chosen, put Donald Trump in the White House.